Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Gals of Geekdom podcast. I am one of your hosts, Crystal Williams. My pronouns are she, her. And we're back again with our amazing, special, awesome guest, Anthony. Want to introduce yourself again?
At this point, I almost feel like I should just be a co-host of the show.
You pretty much are. The only reason I haven't pushed you up to that level is that I still kind of want to keep the semblance of the gal's name.
I see how it is. Yeah. And it would be a little weird if, like, you have three girls and then I show up.
The one dude.
The one guy. Just kind of, like, chilling, like, hey, what's going on? But, I mean, I'm okay. I guess you can count.
It's you and you and you and me and your best friend, Steve.
If I had a decent singing voice, I'd try continuing with that. But I don't want to embarrass myself too much with that.
To Steve.
Oh, God, Steve. I know a few Steves. Steve, you're listening to it. You know what you did. You know what you did, Steve.
You know what you did, Steve, and I'm coming for you, motherfucker.
Basically. I mean, I'll get him somehow, like maybe magic. Who knows? That being said, though, apparently they're doing a Jurassic Park Magic the Gathering set, and I got to get in on this.
I heard something even better.
Mm-hmm.
Evil Dead.
They're doing Evil Dead magic?
Yes.
Oh my God!
And they released the cards, and they're also doing Princess Bride and Creepshow.
You see, I've seen Princess Bride stuff. I wasn't sure if that was like, oh wow! So they're coming as a complete set. Oh, hang on, I'm looking this up now.
The art Princess for the Evil Bride, Dead set is gorgeous.
Doctor Who, yeah, Creepshow. I'm seeing. Honestly, I mean, Magic the Gathering. If Wizards of the Coast wasn't as like. Wizards, I would 100% get, like, those big blow-up prints of, like, all the coolest magic cards and just have them on my wall, because that art is just in-freaking-credible. I adore that beautiful art. It is amazing.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, I don't even play magic, and I think I'm just going to get the Evil Dead set just to have it, you know?
That's what I did with the Lord of the Rings set.
Yeah, I thought about that, too.
That and, of course, you know, the best Lord of the Rings card. The best, the Goldberry, the River Daughter.
Oh.
If you like cards with beautiful women on it, this card is for you. So anyone who enjoys artwork of, you know, if you enjoy the female form, this card is a delightful legendary creature with some tasteful knees showing, and the rest of the leg as well.
Knees?
Yeah, she has a, let's just say she has a, center of the frame is her leg, and it is rather nice, and I will end my thirst at that point, and I'll stop speaking, because I don't want to embarrass myself too much.
So I heard it's, you know, ungodly to show your knees to anybody.
Listen, this is old times. Scandalous. It was scandalous if you showed your ankle.
You ever watch the random sidetrack, but you ever watch the music video for Weird Al Yankovic's Amish Paradise?
Yes, of course.
There's the bit,
Crystal,
where they're looking
any
at
any conversation
Fortnite.
With you will lead only a matter of time to Weird Al. I'm just saying.
And Evil Dead.
Those two things, yeah, at some point.
That was a coincidental thing, though, because I just happened to run across it. I wasn't looking at Evil Dead stuff. It just came to me.
Fair enough.
But the Weird Al one, I always laugh at the bit when the kids are looking at the very adult magazine, and it's just her showing her ankle.
Oh, God.
Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, no, that's some scandalous stuff in the Amish. That's extreme, you know?
Extreme.
Well, let's just say
there's like a lot of like really good old jokes about magazines. I remember Airplane when the nun is reading the Boy's Life magazine and the boy is reading the Nun's Life magazine. That's visual gag if you remember that.
I do remember that. I actually just rewatched Airplane recently. But that makes me think of all the nunsploitation. You ever see any of that?
No.
Well, first off, I'm sure you know what nunsploitation is. Like, you're well versed.
I can tell by the name.
Oh yeah, it's one of those things where the name explains itself. But yeah. There are some strange, freaking movies about nuns that I'm just a little weirded out by, and some fairly recently. Like, growing up in a Catholic upbringing, you realize that nuns are not erotic like they are in Japanese anime, but rather terrifying monsters who enjoy in torturing kids and ruining children's lives and being grouchy and mean spirited. So all this, like,
terrible.
Oh, they're terrifying. Nuns are frightening. Nuns, honestly, the least scary nun is the nun from The Conjuring. But that's a downgrade from the average terrifying level of a nun. Just quite frankly, like,
I mean, the scene in the Blues Brothers when when they're dealing with the nun is a pretty accurate representation of it.
100%. That's what nuns. And like the thing is, you know, I think like the public, when they think of nuns, they think of like Sister Act, or they think of one of those like softened, like Mickey Mouse level nuns. No. The real visual of a nun should be holding a ruler in their hand, and you know what they're going to use that ruler for. And they're going to bludgeon you with it. So all this, like, this nun exploitation subgenre, like, was it Bernadette? Was that the movie's name that came out recently? The Paul Verhoeven movie? Bernadetta.
Movie.
I think it's Bernadetta. Yep. Bernadetta, where it's like, they call a biographical psychological drama about nuns having a lesbian affair with other nuns while having, like, visions of God. It's based on
Did you say lesbians?
Yes. So it's based on the 1985 nonfiction book Immodest Acts, The Life of a Lesbian Nun in Renaissance Italy by Judith C. Brown. And
well, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, the more you talk about this movie, the better it is. It's a great movie. It's very, very good. But, like, it's just find it funny how, like, people's minds go with the most salacious options as opposed to the reality, which is that nuns are terrifying. And I would run away from a nun if I ever saw one in the wild, which I have. And I have ran away, usually in a dignified manner, of course, befitting my position in life.
You mean you ran screaming?
I ran screaming loudly. Yes, flailing my arms, tripping over my shoes, turning back to see if the nun was following me, which of course she was.
She was floating in the air.
Oh, yeah, no. All of nature is repelled by the glare of a nun. Dogs stop in their tracks. Bats fall out of the sky. Birds decide to change the migration patterns to avoid crossing the nun's path. Nuns are terrifying.
They can stop crossing the road.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And there's never been a horror film that has ever captured the sheer terrifying level of a nun in her normal state of mind. They have to have them, like, be demon nuns, I think, because they have to dilute the fear level that nuns generate. Yes.
Slightly less scary, yes.
Yeah, so, like, the nun, like, the demon nun, already big upgrade from a normal nun.
I do find it really funny that that demon takes the form of a nun.
Right?
But the movies are not called the name of the demon. They're called the nun.
Because we can call it Varric. Who's going to know what Varric is? You say the nun. That triggers terror in anyone raised Catholic ever.
That's true.
Yeah.
His name is Varric, right?
I think it's Varric, yeah. And like, the thing is, if you say its name, like, you already have power over it. So, you know, already way weaker than an actual nun. You can scream a nun's name, and they'll just hit you harder with the ruler.
We'll make sure that it hurts twice as much.
Actually, you know what? I lied. There is one movie that captures how terrifying nuns are, and that's Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Okay, I need to actually sit down and watch that one.
Yeah, because the movie, it's about, I mean, so you haven't seen Silent Night, Deadly Night, but the movie is,
I know it,
you know,
but
the
I just
concept.
Haven't seen it. Yeah.
You know
yeah.
the concept. It's pretty well known. But, like, to explain to anyone who hasn't seen it, this, under tragic circumstances involving a horrible Santa Claus encounter, these two kids, they're put up into a Catholic orphanage. And the mother superior there is just the worst. just a cruel, vindictive woman, like, who just tortures these kids. And that's the most accurate portrayal of a nun I've ever seen in film. Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Yeah.
Mm.
But
enough of my religious
that's
trauma.
That's valid. Yeah, religious trauma for sure. I stopped watching the show of Yellowstone. This is a sidetrack, but it's.
Oh, yeah.
I promise it leads back into it. I stopped mm-hmm. watching the show of Yellowstone because it's kind of bad. But I even started watching it, I watched the prequel shows, which are actually like a million times superior in every single way on the main show. I was watching 1923, and I also think that also has to do with the fact that it's Harrison Ford.
Yeah. He's way more entertaining than, like, who even is in the main Yellowstone? Is that Dennis Quaid, or is that...
No, it's... Kevin Costner.
I always get Kevin Costner and Dennis Quaid mixed up in my brain. I don't know what it is about them. They feel like
straight
the same
male actors from the same generation.
Yeah. They even look similar. Like if you look quickly, you have to look it up to double check who it is or hear them speak. The only difference is that Dennis Quaid's a better actor than Kevin Costner, I think.
Oh, that's an interesting take.
I mean, how many movies has Kevin Costner been in that you've actually enjoyed? Him
Field
in.
Of Dreams?
Except for Field of Dreams. That's the only exception.
He's Clark Kent's dad who's horrible.
Yeah, exactly. Seeing, no, son, don't save me. Let the tornado gently swallow me up as it passes over me.
I'll be okay.
I'll be fine. Nope. No, you won't. But, like, you also got Kevin Costner in the masterpiece known as The Postman. And by masterpiece, being the most boring film I've seen in a very long time.
The Postman, you said?
I think it's called The Postman, right? It's where, it's like the post-apocalypse, and Kevin Costner steals, like, a postman outfit, and then recreates the American Postal Service.
Sounds bad.
Yeah, 1997, The Postman. There we go.
It's got a whopping 8% on Rotten Tomatoes.
That's 8 points too high.
Thank you for telling me not to watch it.
Oh no, it's not. It's a chore to sit through. I'm not surprised it swept the Razzies, even though the Razzies are not by no means a metric of quality. Apparently, it swept the Razzies for worst actor, worst director, worst picture, worst screenplay, worst original song, given to the entire song selection.
The movie's fucking 3 hours long. Jesus, that sounds like hell.
Oh, yeah, no. And at least Waterworld is, like, hammy. Like, you can say, oh, it's really goofy, so you can enjoy it. This is just, like, so slow. It takes place in the far-off year of 2013.
That's a long time in the future.
Oh, yes. Very far in the future. So, you know, it's, you know, it's just so...
You reminds me of the Fly of the Conchords bit.
Oh, yeah.
do you remember the distant future, the year 2000?
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, that's another great one. No, yeah. But, no, yeah, that's my mind's been at.
Yeah. That's where your mind's been at, I say. Yeah, where nuns are terrifying.
Yeah, nuns are frightening.
Oh, I was gonna make that connection back. So oh, yeah. In the 1923 prequel show, they have like two like concurring or like three concurring stories. Mm-hmm. One of the family's brothers over in Africa as like a not a hunter per se, but like someone who goes around and protects these like sort of convoys. Mm-hmm. They've got Harrison Ford, keeping the property in check and kind of running the whole town. And then they have a third story with indigenous people where it's at one of those Catholic sort of, well, I'd just say abuse houses because that's what they were. They were like the reform schools. And that show very much, in very graphic detail, showed how evil these nuns were.
Oh, yeah. No, they're terrifying. They're monsters.
Like, bathing one of the indigenous girls with using a steel like scrubber on her back.
Oh, like a Brillo pad?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah, so if you want to see how scary they were and how real, that's pretty real.
100%. I would, if you told me that happened, I'd fully believe you. Not even like a second of hesitation. That sounds exactly like what they would, the horror they do. Now,
the thing about her storyline is she does kill some of those men, so.
Yeah, no, that's, that is horrifying. But not shocking.
Not shocking, no. Especially if you know history.
Yeah, no. That is, Yeah, no. History
fun topic of conversation.
No.
Yeah. Super fun topic of conversation. We were talking about this before we started recording, but you know what's also fun is having movies where Nazis die.
Yes, the best. I mean, Steven Spielberg once said, like, Nazis made the greatest, like, movie bad guys because you could just kill all of them and
not feel bad.
I mean, until, I guess, 2016, but, like, before that, yes. And then all of a sudden people started becoming really upset when the Nazis were bad guys for some strange reason. I don't understand.
I wonder what the reason is.
I don't know. It could be that they're Nazis. I mean, it could be that they're humanists, you see. They're centrists.
Oh, they just care
centrists.
About people.
Yeah, they're centrists they're very empathetic people. That's what it comes down to, clearly. Mm-hmm. Except for people who are not Nazis, apparently. They don't care about that as much, but, you know. Not to get political on this thing or anything.
We've never gotten a political on this show.
God, no. Not by the very nature of this discussion is there anything political ever in our discussion.
Remember, there's no politics in art. There should never be any.
No, never. And that's why in Starfield, we should remove all pronouns. I'm kidding. I'm not still harping on that.
Oh, God. Removing pronouns. Didn't they do like a mod to remove them? But the problem is it just kept they, them. That was the only pronoun.
Yeah, it removed he, she, he, him, and she, her. So everything became they, them.
Everyone's non-binary.
Everything. Gender is removed. Everything is now. The gender binary has been destroyed. This is the future liberals want.
It's funny when they have that like image with this is the future liberals want, and it's literally just some weird kink image where it's like a bunch of women whipping men.
Oh yeah, no.
And everyone replies with like, "Yes, please."
It sounds like a really nice future, actually. I mean, in fairness,
sounds so bad. Oh no.
I mean, in total fairness, it could be worse. It could be like some Hellraiser, like Clive Barker situation where it becomes like, actually worse. I'm saying worse. I'm not sure that's the right word to describe the situation.
I do find you're making it sound better.
Yeah, honestly. I do find it funny how like online, especially when getting into discussions online, the go-to always seems to, a response to anyone arguing a leftist point always seems to be someone throwing like porn at the person or like some sexually lewd thing as though they expect us to be like super super vulnerable and to back down at the hint of bare ankles like a Puritan, which is funny because most of the right wing media is what does all the censoring. I'm not sure if you saw this, Crystal. There was I think from Kentucky, there was a video going around of these Kentucky people, I think it was like the senator or like some politicians, initiating a book burning with flamethrowers.
I did see this.
But
I know they were trying to say that it was boxes.
There was empty boxes, they were saying, which is, I think, even worse because that shows they're rehearsing the book burning. Like, you'd hope if they have to burn books, it's kind of like a spur-of-the-moment decision. In this case, it's like going to a dress rehearsal and knowing that you have to sit through the full concert later on again. Why would you do that to yourself? Unless you really want to burn books, which is, I think, really weird to be that into burning books. Like, beyond just the fact you want to censor. Sorry, okay.
Imagine being that much. No, you're good. Imagine being that much into recreating Nazism.
Yeah. Which is why you don't like when Nazis get killed in movies. Back to your point.
I think we should have more movies of more Nazis being murdered because it'll reveal. It's very telling. Who gets mad? It's like the whole, I remember Wolfenstein when they were doing the advertising online on Twitter about it. And there was a bunch of people mad that they were saying that they were going to kill Nazis, you know?
Strangely, a lot of gamers didn't want to kill Nazis all of a sudden. I can't imagine why. Because when I was growing up,
it's not like there was a weird regressive social movement around gamers between 2013 and 2016.
No, don't be silly. That's not possibly it. That can't be it.
No, it's just that they really care. They really care about people.
These are empathetic people we're talking about. They have spirits that is a spirited response to the. I can't even joke with this anymore. They're just weird, okay? They're just nuts. And quite frankly, like, I find it funny because, like, Wolfenstein, it's a continuation of a game series that was popular for so many years. And all of a sudden now they're like, you know, they're, I don't know, it's ridiculous. But again, if they made another Wolfenstein game right now, I'm not sure if they're even thinking about it. I almost fear what the response might be. Because, like, while it's not as extreme as in 2016, I feel like there is still that big movement of anti-leftist rhetoric. But I do feel like it's, to some capacity, there are some segments have gotten more extreme, but the number of people has diminished, if that makes sense, I feel like, based on online interaction exclusively. Like, it feels like the ones who are still there are, like, more extreme, but I also feel like the number is dropping. Like, it feels like there's less people. But again, I could be being optimistic. I don't know I'm not basing it off of anything scientific. It's more of a gut feeling.
Remember how often we both had to deal with bullshit back then?
Oh, God, yeah, no, 100%. I was reading something about, this is going back to the Comicsgate people, how a lot of the alt-right...
The losers.
Oh, yeah, no, totally. But it's funny because a lot of their crowdfunding has actually gone down. Like, back in 2018, these alt-right creators, they were getting, like, mainly based on their YouTube presence, they were getting sometimes millions of dollars raised for their comics. Comics that would ultimately get released. And after they were released, people stopped wanting to fund these comics. Probably because they weren't all that good. Because
Are you telling me that a group of people whose main way of promoting their mediocre art was by jumping onto culture war bullshit bandwagons to sell things to ignorant people? What?
It's crazy. You know, it's funny. They didn't really have much of an artistic vision to promote. They just had, like, hate to spoon out. But I was seeing that a lot of their recent crowdfunding attempts were, like, maybe half. They got half as much money. They got a third of as much money, even a fourth, across the board. Not just one to the other, but, like, all of them were, like, super diminishing returns. To the point where they're starting to infight.
Oh.
Which is, you know, entertaining.
Just get a big bag of popcorn and sit back.
Yeah. While having another screen with Nazis being killed in movies, like you were describing before. I feel like we keep getting away from the point you were trying to make. I'm sorry.
What, that killing Nazis in movies is fun?
Yes, that's the one.
Which I just watched the movie Wrath of Becky, which I told you about before we started recording.
Yeah.
And that is a movie about a teenage girl murdering Nazis. And it's awesome.
I will say
that the Nazis in this film are more so sort of the typical militia, you know, like, small militia group type of actual fascists we're seeing today. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they're not waving around swastikas, but they use all the the incel talking points and all that.
Yeah, yeah. So more realistic, like based
on
what
they
went
more
now.
Realistic with that. Yeah. The first, so funny story. I watched this movie called Wrath of Becky, not knowing that it was actually a sequel to a movie called Becky. So I'm going to go back and watch the first one, but I watched the trailer for the first one. And the first one does make it a little bit more obvious that these are Nazis because Kevin James's character literally has a swastika tattoo on the back of his head.
That would definitely help tease the fact that they're Nazis a little bit better.
Yeah, just a little bit. In this one, it's just more how they talk. And, well, one character does have a copy of Mein Kampf, but...
yeah, that would be... That's a sign, usually.
Yeah. But I will say for most of the movie, they're just the more realistic fascist approach. Like, there's definitely hints that it's January 6th or types, you know?
Mm. Yeah, yeah. There's based a lot purely of, on their actual voices and what they say and all that.
Yeah, their plan. They have a plan to start an insurrection, so...
Yeah, that typically is a good sign that they're Nazis. Yeah, but like it's
and they hate a senator with the last name Hernandez. So
oh yeah, that's definitely a sign right there.
It was a woman, so it's almost like there's a real life political figure that the movie was basing that off of.
Yeah, it's wild how that happens. It's always like some type of sign of some kind, like art referring to. Real life in that sense. But I also mentioned...
Some movies can't be political, so of course it's not political.
No, nothing's ever political. Speaking of a non-political film, I was also telling you in response that I had recently seen the movie Sisu, which
yes,
I think
I
is...
Saw
an,
it.
Oh, yeah, it's an incredible movie. I loved every second of that. It's like John Wick, but World War II, essentially. and
killing Nazis.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, there's some grotesque ways he kills Nazis in that movie, and it is...
Oh, yeah, it's gruesome.
Oh, it's bloody as anything, and I love it. It's one of those movies where, like, every second you see something new, and you're like, oh, my God, I can't believe they did this way of one-upping the last violent... And it's an action film. It's an action-revenge film. So you expect there's to be some brutal ways that they take care of people in the movie. But the way that they... It shows the human determination so well, and it shows the drive of one person just to keep surviving, and also take as many people down under as possible. And I don't mean to Australia, I mean to another region south of all of us. I just think it's a really great movie. I think Sisu's fantastic. I have not seen...
You all should check out Sisu.
Yeah. I've not seen Becky yet, but... After you, I think I was sent a review copy for the movie. I never watched it. I was going through my email. I think I was sent like
the
a screener
second one was
for
really
it.
Good. The second one was really good. So I have a feeling I'd probably enjoy the first one.
Oh yeah. Plus Kevin James, he's one of those actors who I feel like I don't know. I feel like most of Adam Sandler's like extended crew, they all have the potential to be really good, except for Rob Schneider, but just choose to be in goofy movies more often than not.
Well, it is funny that Steve Buscemi is in a bunch of Adam Sandler movies, and he's, like, great.
Oh, yeah. He's fantastic. Steve Buscemi's incredible. I always think of – it's so funny. Whenever I think of Steve Buscemi, I'm not sure if I think more of, like, him in, like, Mr. Deeds being, like, goofy or Fargo. Like, I think of one of those two films first, and I couldn't even tell you which one it comes to mind first. That in Spy Kids 2, where he has the greatest line in any children's movie. That's just so out of place, but so perfect. Just with how like surprisingly like deep, but also how off-putting it feels in that kind of context.
And he delivers it well.
Oh yeah, he it looks like he's trying to win an Oscar with that line. Like the way he delivers it. In a movie that's, like, so goofy and so silly, like, otherwise.
He's also great at The Big Lebowski.
Oh, it's fantastic. Oh, okay. Well, first off, everyone's great in The Big Lebowski. There's like no exception. They're all fantastic.
John Goodman steals scenes in that movie.
Oh, John Goodman's incredible. I love John Goodman, but in that movie, he is like perfect. Every line, every single like yelling, screaming moment, I think is incredible with him in that.
I love that character. He's such like a convoluted mess of really interesting ideas all mixed into one.
Well, that's kind of like what a person is, though, you know? Like, a lot of people are so self-contradictory. And yet they all just hang out with the guy, despite how he's, like, yelling and screaming and pulling guns on people. But they're all, like, just chill with him. It's like...
I think even funnier is that it's, like, he's some, like, ex-war, like, vet. Like,
I think Vietnam, right?
And he's, like, best friends with, like, the hippiest of hippies, you know, like...
I wonder if that's, like, part of the joke, because, I mean, obviously part of the joke. I mean, the whole movie's a joke, but, like, I wonder if, like, that's part of, like, the sarcasm of these characters. Like, they're both so contradictory and such opposites, yeah. They gel together so well.
I do love that bit where the dude is, like, racist in describing one of the men.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He urinated in his house, and the John Wayne's character is the first one to immediately correct him.
And then use the term himself 5 seconds later.
Yeah. I'm not going to say it because it's definitely not.
No. I don't want to have a soundbite of myself saying that.
But if you've seen The Big Lebowski.
You know what I'm talking about. You know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
I adore that movie so much. And that's
I think that's my favorite Coen Brothers movie. Not going to lie.
Yeah. No, it's up there with Fargo for me. I don't know which one I like more. Because they're such different vibes, you know? Like, the Coen brothers, they have such a weird thing with a balance between, like, extreme comedy and extremely disturbing. Like, sometimes in the same movie. I think for me, Big Lebowski's my favorite, then Fargo. And after that, I couldn't tell you, because they're all so great. Blood Simple,
I think. No Country for Old Men is good.
No Country for Old Men I like a lot, but I think of the Cormac McCarthy novel before the film for whatever reason. I think Blood Simple is super underrated. And I think it's incredible. Not as big as the Burn After
Reading as well.
Not as big into that one. I liked it.
Yeah, I wasn't as big into it, but yeah, I'm same.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what else. Like, there's a few others. Oh, no, Barty, Fink. What's the first name? Oh, crud.
Barton Fink,
is that it? Barton Fink, or
is that what it's called?
Yeah, I think it's Barton Fink. Yeah, Barton Fink. Yeah, that one with John Turturro and also John Goodman. That movie is incredible, but like not as watchable as Fargo or The Big Lebowski. I feel like it's a little. You have to really get into that one because it is just so.
I forgot about Hail Caesar. That's another interesting film.
Hail Caesar, I like. I like that one a lot. That one's fun. And, like, it's so, I think it's so real and how, like, banal it is and, like, how everyone just doesn't seem to care. But, like, oh, it's so over the top and beautiful. I love, that's a good one, too. Now I want to look up, now I want to watch all of these again. This is bad. Crystal, you're sending me down a dark path here.
I'm sending you down the Coen Brothers movies.
Oh, True Grit. True Grit, yeah, there we go. That's another great one. Inside Llewyn Davis.
Yeah.
That's great. Oh, yeah, the Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
I didn't see that one.
I've seen that one. It's like an anthology, kind of. That one's pretty good. It's memed a lot, too. What's up?
I forgot that was a Netflix movie.
Yeah, that's a straight Netflix one. I started watching without realizing it was a Coen Brothers film. And then all of a sudden you see the title card and you're like, oh, well, there you go.
Oh, this makes sense.
Oh, yeah, look at the cast list. It's immediately just the weird cast you'd expect the Coen Brothers to come together with. Lady Killers.
Yeah, I just realized I need to, like, actually see more on my watching through of their filmography. I've seen a few, but I haven't seen them all. I was also talking to somebody about Spike Lee. I've only seen a handful.
Oh, Spike Lee's great. He has some really good ones. But I was actually, before we lose track of Coen Brothers, The Hudsucker Proxy.
Yeah, I've heard of that one. I just haven't seen it.
Directed by the Coen Brothers, written by Sam Raimi.
So I should see this now.
Yes. And it's about Tim Robbins inventing the hula hoop.
Isn't that the one that also has a cameo from Bruce Campbell?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he shows up. I mean, it's a Sam Raimi film. I mean, it's the Coen Brothers, but it's a Sam Raimi film. So you got, like, a lot of the Coen Brothers regulars, but you get a bunch of the Sam Raimi regulars, too.
It's a good mix, then.
Oh, yeah. It's like they're fighting for dominance there. Which is just so surreal to me. And Paul Newman, strangely enough.
That's funny. I'm on IMDb, and for that movie, it has both Joel and Ethan Coen as directors, but under Ethan, it says it's uncredited. So I guess they just put it under Joel?
I don't know, actually. I guess it's like... Yeah, it's so he's uncredited. Yeah, that's right. It's under Joel only. Now I'm looking at it, too, on the poster.
I guess Ethan was directing, too?
I assume so. I mean, I feel like a lot of them, until recently, it would always work together, but like I think the last 5 years they've been doing more their own individual projects.
I have seen that. Yeah, like I forgot which one has a new one coming out.
Ethan.
It's Ethan?
Yeah.
It's
Driveway like Dolls.
Yes. I saw a trailer for that.
Actually, oh, Pedro Pascal's in it. And Matt Damon.
Yes.
Huh. Okay.
Are you calling?
That's interesting.
That'd be good.
Yeah, I'm curious. I'm sure it'd be cool. The poster's interesting. The poster is just the a woman's backside.
So, yeah.
I am intrigued by it. I'm sure this is fine. It looks cool. Or maybe it's a bowling ball. Bowling pin. No, it's a woman's.
You're being too forgiving with that one.
I was hoping they connected to Big Lebowski somehow.
I forgot. There's a new season of Fargo coming out.
Oh, yeah, no, I have to catch that, too. There's a lot of things I have to watch. It's terrible. What's his name? Haunting of Hill House.
Mike Flanagan's...
Mike Flanagan. He has a new show.
The House of Usher.
Yeah, yes. I'm curious. I'm very
and
curious
it has
about
every
that.
One of his staples in it.
Yeah. It has a lot of usuals.
And also Mark Hamill.
Oh, he's in there, too?
Yes.
Oh, of course he is.
I don't know what they did with his hair or his face. He looks slightly different.
That's fair. I imagine whenever Mike Flanagan makes anything, I'm there opening day because incredible. Just a masterful director and horror storyteller.
And writer. He's a great writer.
Oh, yeah. All of it. And what he gets so perfectly is how he's able to capture the human spirit so well. Like, he's able to capture the empathy with people.
I think that's why I like his things. It's like he knows how to write scary shows and movies that are character-driven and a character first. You know, it's not about the monster or whatever. I mean, that he can make you shit your pants with how scary that is, but... I think he's a really great with getting to the like you said, the empathy, the humanity of people.
Agreed. And I think that's why Stephen King loves him so much. Because, like, King's novels are so empathetic and human. That's why and I feel like rereading Pet Sematary has really shown me just how Stephen King, a lot of his adaptations
mess up. Pet Sematary is great.
It's fantastic. The book is fantastic. The movies, I feel, consistently, and it's kind of hard to do this in, like, a movie format. I get it. But, like, they don't get a sense of loss. they get a sense of the immediate pain, but they don't capture loss and mourning and melancholy as well as that book does. Because, like, what's scary isn't the animal, isn't, like, the cat coming back from the grave or the kid coming out of the grave. It's that, it's the fear that leads to that point. If that makes sense.
And the longing for something you lost, the grief that you feel, the pain. That's kind of what the Pet Sematary novel's about. Like, if you go in that book reading, going like, oh yeah, there's going to be zombies in it, you're going to be really disappointed because that's not what that book is about. Like, the magical stuff is just kind of like side kind of component to the more important overarching theme.
Exactly. And what bothers me is
similar to like the Babadook, I guess.
Oh yeah, very similar. I'd say the Babadook captures that vibe very well. Yeah. What bugs me though is when they were remaking Pet Sematary, they did the new movie a couple years back. A lot of people were like hyping up the movie up, saying, "Oh, they're going to show us the Wendigo from the book." And like, well, first off, the Wendigo barely appears in the book. Like, it's a very background detail. It's not relevant. It's just there. It's like an explanation for the.
It's an abstract thought, you know.
Yeah. They don't even really confirm it is a Wendigo. They just call it a Wendigo. Like, it's not even like necessarily. Like, it's funny. Like, the movie, the second movie, I think has one really good scene, and the rest I think is absolute like not anything remarkable to it. And the scene that I get gets the book so well in the new movie is the scene where, so spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen Pet Sematary, the second version. But unlike in the book in the first film where the young boy, Gage, is run over by a truck, it's the older sister who's run over by a truck. And the father brings her back, but putting her in a Pet Sematary and what have you. And there's a scene where he's bathing her. And he starts to notice all the elements about her that are just not right, like the way her eyes look, the way there's like stapled up scalp, her scalp's all stapled up. Like, that unreality is what the book captures so well. That sense of like disconnect between what you think it should be and what it is when you're dealing with someone who's been brought back to life. It's so disquieting and it's so common in the book. Like, it, even with, like, the cat, you know, they describe, like, scenes where the cat is, like, just perched on, like, the arm of a chair or on someone's lap, and they describe it as though something's, like, rotting on them. It's, like, this sensory feeling they just can't get in the movies, but they capture so perfectly in the book. It's incredible.
Yeah, King describes it very well. And I also think Pet Sematary is a really great example of King having these moments of like disgust, but also just not going for the shock value for shock value's sake.
Oh yeah,
I feel like he hits that like balance really well. Because I was kind of, I always have a sensitivity to animal death in media.
Oh yeah.
So when I was reading it, I just was like, oh god, I hope they don't describe it. But when it happens, it's actually pretty tame.
Yeah, when the cat dies? Yeah, because it's all off screen. Like, they just, like, it's funny because, you know, they just find, the worst part about it is them pulling the cat off of the frosty grass. And the way they describe it, like, that sensory element is what really cements it. But, like, again, you don't always see the awful death happen in front of you. Like, most of the death, in the book at least, is done off page. Until the very end, when
I think the most gruesome part was the when he's helping that man that got into the accident, or the kid, I guess.
Yeah, passed
up. That is the most gruesome part of that movie, you know, or that book. Sorry, not movie. Both. I mean the novel. Both. I have not seen the movies, so I don't know what they showed, but I just know the novel.
Oh, in the most novel. Gruesome. In the movie, the first movie, they have some really good makeup effects for him. Like, you see all of it. But honestly, like, because you see so much of it, because they show the ghost come back a few times, like, it stops being as disturbing and starts almost becoming, like, kind of funny in a weird way. Like, especially in the first film. The second version, it's like, I wasn't a fan of the second adaptation.
I'm very curious to also hear your thoughts on the new film that's coming out.
Oh, the prequel series?
I think it's a show, a movie.
Is it a movie or those a series? I could be mistaken. Let me dig into this. Because I actually have... I've avoided looking up anything for it. Bloodlines, right?
Pet Sematary Bloodlines? Yeah, it's set in 1969. And it has David Duchovny in it.
Huh. Did not know he was in that.
And Pam
Grier it's a film. One. It is a film. Okay. I thought it was a... I thought it was a series. Okay, that's fine. I'll have to watch it then.
Movie, it looks like it's directly connected to the other film you don't like.
Yeah, well, I'm fine with that if it's good. Like, I've seen sequels to movies I didn't like and enjoyed them more than the original. But
you might enjoy this more because it's not directly. It doesn't seem like it's directly adapting the novel in any way.
No, it looks like it's. It looks like it's kind of adapting elements of the flashbacks from the novel.
Right.
That's interesting. Okay.
Stars a young Judd.
That's interesting.
Jackson White.
I'm definitely curious. I hope it's good. Like.
Yeah.
You know, the problem I always have. Oh, actually, just premiered at Fantastic Fest, yesterday, the day before we recorded this, the 23rd, which is interesting. I mean, I'm sure it'd be fun. I'm just hesitant because, like, Pet Sematary for me is such a great work. I always get a little worried because you haven't seen the movies, you said, right?
Oh, I just read the novel.
Okay, so you have not seen Pet Sematary 2 then?
No.
So, okay, what if I told you, I'm going to just say some of the actors in Pet Sematary 2, and I'm going to tell you right now why. I'm going to name two actors specifically, Edward Furlong and Clancy Brown.
What an interesting mix.
And there's a scene involving Clancy Brown eating breakfast, and... he's spitting up his breakfast while laughing.
Okay.
Also, he's a cop.
Oh.
Who wants to... A-cab. Yeah, so there you go. And they really go A-cab in this movie. I'll just put it that way.
Huh.
But surprisingly...
Is it bad?
You know what it is? It's not that it's bad. It's that it's very goofy. And I'm avoiding saying a few things because in case you do end up watching it, I don't want to spoil the film. But there are some choices it makes. All very ridiculous.
Does it try and do like an explanation of everything?
No. Thankfully, it doesn't. Okay. It's just kind of insane. Though there is a scene where someone gets killed with a motorcycle tire.
Oh.
Yeah, that's still spinning.
That's gruesome.
Oh, it's grotesque and disgusting and worth watching for that scene alone, but it's also just kind of out of its mind.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Oh, yeah. It's not scary whatsoever. It's just campy and goofy. Like, there's nothing about it is remotely frightening, but it is so over the top it's worth watching.
I will maybe have to look at it. Yeah. Or at least look at scenes.
Yeah, look up there's some clips you can probably there's some fun clips from the movie, but like I don't want to say it's something you should stop drop everything you're doing and watch. Like it's very okay.
I should at least watch the original
adaptation
of Pet Sematary. I read the book I chose a King book. I knew I wanted to read King, but I also wanted to read something that I had no knowledge of, like the adaptation of the film, so that I could have something kind of like new, you know.
That's fair. You should look.
I saw The Shining, and yeah.
Was it
Oh no, because I had already seen The Shining and stuff like that. Yeah.
You should read The Jaunt.
The Jaunt?
The Jaunt. It's one of Stephen King's short stories.
Okay.
It was written for the Twilight Zone magazine. And it's like this, the concept of The Jaunt is it's a sci-fi society. They have figured out a way to teleport. So from one distance to the other. So Crystal, if you wanted to hang out with me today, you could do that with The Jaunt. You just have to make sure you're put under, like you're basically gassed before you go through the jaunt. Because if you're awake during the experience, you lose your mind.
Well, that makes sense.
Oh yeah. But I won't say why you'll lose your mind, but it's one of those things that's like so existentially terrifying of a concept.
Awesome.
Oh yeah, no. And it's not scary in that you're going to see some terrifying monster. It's more just the most frightening conceptual idea possible.
It reminds me of, like, the I have no mouth and I must scream.
Yeah, it's more in line with that. Like, there's more that kind of terror, where it's like, what's scary isn't anything you're seeing. It's more the hopelessly depressing concept you're dealing with, like almost like an overly oppressive idea that just burrows in your brain, and it goes on for longer than you think.
Now that's on my list.
Oh yeah, no, yeah, and trust me, it's a short book, but it goes on longer than you think. It'll stick with you for a while. No, it's a good book. A good short story. But, no, Stephen King's great. I love Stephen King. I think some of his concepts are a little... Not all of his books are as good. Like, I think Thinner is just the worst. But
I know Thinner, but I know the movie.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. I don't like Thinner. I think it's one of those concepts that's, like, so... Like, I don't know. I get why Stephen King wrote it, and he's, like with most of King's stuff, he draws from some life experience or life fears of his, but like, I just don't like it. I don't like Thinner at all.
Well, you're not alone. The critics don't seem to like it either.
No, that's King's worst book, I think. And the film is just not a fan of either. Though the book at least doesn't have the terrible makeup effects. The film.
Oh, that's good. Hey, do you know what movie is also coming out that actually is getting positive reviews?
A few different things. What specifically?
Toxic Avenger.
Oh my god, I can't freaking wait for that. I am. So I'll tell you this about Toxic Avenger. My grandmother showed it to me as a kid. My grandmother showed it to me. You're probably thinking, oh, your grandmother probably. Didn't know it. Probably just picked up a movie and didn't know what it was. No, she had seen it before. She just knew I would get a kick out of it.
Did she show you the R-rated cut or the full?
I forget which one. I think she might have gone for the less extreme version, but like, I still same result. And actually, what's funny is back in the Comic Con,
I love the Toxic Avenger.
I actually got to meet Lloyd Kaufman.
Yeah, I did too.
I love that guy. He's great. And I told him that my grandmother showed me the movie when I was a kid. And even he seemed a little, like, put off by that. Even he had a moment like, wait, what? I think he's just so funny.
First time I met him, I was buying a DVD copy of Toxic Avenger to own from the booth, and I was getting him to sign it. And then he was like going on about how, like, oh, this is the movie that inspired Peter Jackson. And
I can see that though. That's the thing. Like Peter Jackson, he would be inspired by Toxic Avenger.
I just found it really funny that Lloyd was just talking himself up. Like,
oh no, he does it all the time. Everything I've ever seen him in. He always talks himself up a bit, which I'm like, you know what, you go
from
do that.
Getting your autograph. I mean, you, don't need to tell me how great it is. I know how great your silly movie is.
He's such a character, though. I think it's so fun.
Like, no, it's lovable.
Oh, yeah, no. He's so entertaining. Like, he's such a... But I think that's the thing about, like, someone like that, that sets them apart from other people in the film industry. Like, he doesn't seem afraid to make himself look completely ridiculous.
Exactly.
Like, he doesn't take himself seriously, so, like, you're just good with whatever he pulls. Because it's like, you know he's not, like, I don't know, some people, when they talk about themselves, it's like, you get the sense that they're so full of themselves that, like, you can't stomach it. It almost feels at times that he's making fun of that by the sheer existence of his being.
I mean, he did write guest pieces for The Onion.
That is
so
true.
He is willing to be silly and to make fun of how Hollywood is so into itself, you know?
Yeah, overly so.
I give him credit too, because I watched on Shudder, I watched the documentary series called Cursed Films.
Yes.
And they were talking about the incident for the Twilight Zone movie. And they would constantly go back to Lloyd, which is really funny because he's making his recent movie and he was fully in drag for the interview. But I respected him way more when he was talking about the fact that he puts up signs that says, like, human life above everything. So, I appreciate that as a fellow filmmaker and understanding that, like, he cares about safety more than anything. So I think that's super cool.
100%. Yeah. I've also seen Cursed Films and I love that. Actually,
it was great.
He's so great in that, especially when you're talking about, like, the John Landis incident with the Twilight Zone movie. It's like, the level of arrogance that John Landis had, thinking that he could, like, pull off those effects and pull off those things with no regard for the safety of the people around him. It's like, regardless of, like, what your opinion of that incident is, like, it's so irresponsible and so, like, and, like, it's refreshing seeing with Lloyd Kaufman going kind of like, you know, hey, listen, let's cool it down, take it easy, and, you know, it's not worth dying over. And, like, you see with movies all the time to this day, people getting, like, killed on set, like, stunt. Like, even with barring examples like the Alec Baldwin situation, there's the with Black Widow, a stunt driver was killed in a stunt, you know?
Yes. And that's Deadpool, like, for his too, as well.
Yeah, no, it was
like Deadpool as well, yeah.
Deadpool, yeah. It's like a lot of these big budget movies, people are killed making them. And it's like, ultimately speaking, it's for movies that, like, you know, they're fun. That's one of the reasons why I don't mind CG as much as some people do. Like, bad CG, sure, but, like, you know, you think about what computer graphics have been used to avoid showing. Like, for example, animals that could be dangerous on set.
Yeah.
You know, you can use CG to avoid putting actors in danger with real-life animals who are uncontrollable, who are unpredictable. Because, yeah, the shot of a real bear might be good, but, like, you're also risking all the lives around you if that animal loses it, you know?
You're also risking the life of the animal itself.
100%, yeah, 100%. Both are at risk because you don't know what you're doing might set it off, and then you might have to fight for your own survival. Like, at the end of the day, like, a dog and a cat might be, you know, domesticated, but even then they could still hurt you.
Yeah.
If you, like, if you affect them the wrong way. I always think of the movie Roar. You ever hear that one?
I have heard of that one.
Yeah, where it's like they basically filmed it on an animal reserve. Who was it who did that one? It's 1981. It's Marshall and Tippi Hedren produced it. And so basically, the Hendrons, they had a pride of lions, essentially. They brought them into their home to protect them. So they made a movie in this big cat reserve, basically rescued big cats. And the film took 11 years to complete.
That's a long
time. Like, from
time.
Start of production to end of production. Like, they... Production started with the first script in 1970. The film came out in 1981. And even then, filming only started in 1976. Like, just the pre-production alone was massive. Apparently, 70 people, including the stars, were injured while making this film because of the animals. There was flooding from a dam. There was just a lot of messy, awful stuff. It's like the most dangerous film probably ever made.
Jeez.
Yeah. Just wild.
That is wild.
Yeah. And the fact that it exists. And of course, Tippi Hedren wasn't really in many things. like, before, I mean, she was in Hitchcock productions, but then she got, but basically one of the reasons why she didn't really have much of a role after, after that, it was because of War. She was producing War.
Definitely wasn't the smartest decision.
Yeah. No, yeah.
Just looking at what she did in more recent years.
Yeah, this
is always interesting to find the older actors and see what they did like in later parts of their life. You know?
Oh, 100%. It's surreal because you look at like their you always forget, you know, that the legacy of film is so short if you really think about it. So one of the last major actors to star in a Universal horror film only died a few years ago. Which, it's stunning to think that. Like, the Universal films, like those are classics. Actually, let me see if any of them are still alive. Any surviving actors from Universal Monsters movies? Yeah, no, so... Okay, so there are a couple who have like who had some. I guess there's like a singer who was in one of the Abbott and Costello movies. She's still alive. Brett Halsley.
Definitely older.
Yeah, there's a lot of. It gets interesting. There's a few other ones too. Like there's some very old. A lot of people from *Revenge of the Creature* are still alive. Oh, and I guess Clint Eastwood. Does he count? Does Clint Eastwood count as an actor from the Universal Monster movies?
I guess technically.
I mean, he was in what was it Revenge of the Creature? One of the Creature movies. Creature from the Black Lagoon, I mean, but like, yeah, because he it was one of his first roles, so I guess he counts. Still, there's very few of them. Like, there's very few actors in that who are still alive to this day. It's surreal to reflect on, you know?
Yeah.
Like, how short the cinematic history of society really is. When you look to the beginning and end, it's like, I remember someone once saying that if you took the history of the world from its creation to the current day, and you compressed all of that to like a 24-hour period of time, humanity would be in the very last second of the whole day. Like all of human history could be compressed in that last second because of how like brief human existence has really been in the vast scheme of the world's expanse. It's just, I don't know. I feel like we're getting existential on you right now. We were talking about monster movies a few seconds ago.
No, it's fine. I'm just thinking about that Monty Python song, or the Eric Idle song, really, because he did it, but
mm-hmm.
about the universe, how we're just a small speck of it, you know?
Oh, yeah. Same. It's more true than you realize sometimes, like how small existence truly is, but how much of it has happened and how valuable those sparks of beauty, like art and everything, are in that tiny little way. I don't know. I don't know if I see it as validating or terrifying. Maybe both.
Well, it's been used in art for both.
That's true. And that's something great right there. Because like art, honestly, is such a... Now I'm getting existential. Wow. Okay, I should stop myself now. Because if I keep this up, we're going to go down like a depressing rabbit hole of existential dread.
If you want to do that, you could just read some of those things that we mentioned. Like,
yes, it's true.
I have no mouth and I must scream. It's pretty wild.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's a... And Harlan Ellison in general, like, his stuff is generally just so existentially terrifying and so unpleasant, but also so kind of brilliant in its own way. I don't know. But some of his stuff is also really weird. I was watching a clip about him that I responded to on TikTok, where it was like an old interview with Harlan Ellison where he was talking about, like, how he was expressing disappointment with how female writers in sci-fi would write these popcorn books, like Mercedes Lackey or Anne McCaffrey. And I'm just like, you know, minorities should have the right to write garbage too, you know? Not everything has to be like a Nebula winner. Like, it's a whole discussion. It's a whole thing. It's like it's the idea that works written by marginalized populations are judged under, like, a microscope, whereas everything else is kind of, like, given a pass if it's not great. But, like, a work written by, say, like, the first sci-fi written by a woman, or the first sci-fi written by a gay or trans or black or, you know, whatever the demographic might be, has to be perfect, or else it's not given any respect as a piece of art.
That's true.
And it's like, well, people should be able to make mediocre material and that should be valid, you know? You should be able to make stuff that's not always great, but still cool. And that should be respected. I don't know. It's not a radical take or anything, I don't think.
No, you're not being radical.
No, I'm not that radical, I guess.
By the way, I can't believe they made a video game off of that.
I have no mouth on my screen. Oh, yeah, no.
100%. Yeah.
And that
what an interesting concept.
And that Ellison was involved in it too, was even crazier. Like, but that whole era of games is like the point and click adventure. There's some strange entries in that.
Strange, but also very creepy and like disturbing and
disquieting. Yeah, there was that one that H.R. Giger was involved in. What was that called? It was called. I feel like I'm doing a lot of searching while describing this. Dark Seed. Yeah,
I'm looking it up right now. It's very much his style.
Oh, yeah, no, totally. It feels like everything looks like it comes from the set of
Alien.
Background of Alien, yeah. I think, I want to say the YouTuber Picking Up Roses did a good recount of that.
The Dark Seed?
She did. Yeah, she did. Yeah, she did a whole Halloween special. She did a whole thing on it, yeah. Actually, okay. I'm looking back at this. 2013. 2015. Wow, that's interesting. I always think it's funny when you think about how old the internet is now. Like, that we have, like, things that are, like, a decade old, essentially, on YouTube, just commonly.
All right. I see her video. I'll watch it. Yeah, I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, it's interesting. They have some good stuff. Dark Seed is interesting. It's not great, but it's very intriguing, we'll say.
I prefer interesting, you know.
Honestly, yeah. If it's interesting, at least it's something.
Yeah. Huh. As much as I want to continue, I do think we are reaching a good resolution point for this
episode. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure no one wants to hear me babble too much more about, like, existential dread.
Well, we could, but unfortunately, we got things to do.
Indeed. There we go.
And And with that, thank you for listening to another episode of Galaxy Geekdom Podcast. Do you want to tell everybody where they can find you?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter and TikTok at AGREMUGLIA or something like that. Just search my name, you'll find. So just search Anthony Grimulli on Google, you'll find it somewhere probably. I have content being written for various websites. I'm right now working on a piece for Dread Central that hopefully will be out or at least ready to be published in the next couple of weeks, where I'm hoping. I also have bylines in various websites. I don't feel like listing all of them, but, yeah. Oh my goodness.
Oh, read those. Go do the things.
Yeah, there's some things.
Crystal Williams, you can follow me on Twitter at Crystal W Rocks. I have a link tree that links to all my other various things, and you can read my articles on Medium under Crystal Williams. Thank you for listening to another episode, and be on the lookout. The next time that we have an episode, it's going to be for Halloween season. So there may be some creepy things afoot.
Oh, hopefully. I love creepy stuff.
Well, same. And with that being said, thank you for listening. See you next time. Goodbye.